Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, and welcome to a very special quarantine podcast for Roker Report. I'm XR Bomber here, and I'm absolutely delighted to be able to welcome former Dutch international, whose club career boasts spells at Liverpool, Chelsea, Barcelona, and obviously, most impressively, Sunderland. It is, of course, the one and only Bolo Zenden. Bolo, good afternoon. How are you doing?
Hi, look, I'm fine, thank you. I guess we're all in a difficult position at the moment, but that's the way it is. We have to deal with it.
Yeah, I was going to say, how are you coping with the quarantine and lockdown? Are you able to keep yourself active and preoccupied?
Well, the good thing, I guess, is that we don't have a lockdown like in some other countries. We're still rather free to move. But most of the time, we're at home. I've got two young boys. They need schooling. We're busy with that. And we do the grocery for the elderly within the family. And once every while, I go out and I go for a run just to stay fit. And that's how we go from week to week and see what the next step is in this epidemic.
Yes, certainly unprecedented. And it sounds like it's very similar to what's going on in the UK at the minute. But we've got to do what we've got to do given the circumstances. But I want to talk to you about kind of happier times, really. And talk, obviously, with a lack of football going on at the minute, have a bit of a chat about your career. So I wanted to start with your early career. So obviously, you started in the Netherlands with PSV. Louis van Gaal takes over at Barcelona. And then the following summer brings in a whole host of Dutch players, including yourself, Philip Cocu and Kluivert, and then the two De Boers came in January. So you all have been at France, I think, during that summer at the World Cup. So how did that transfer to Barcelona come about?
I knew of the interest, and I knew Barca wanted to sign me after doing well at PSV, and I also featured on a few occasions against Barcelona with PSV in the European competitions. And just in between the World Cup and our preparations, I believe there was 2 or 3 days where I was off. I did travel to Barcelona to finalize the medical and the contract itself. That's why in between the end of the season and the start of the World Cup, I signed my contract. They were eager to sign the contract before the World Cup, just in case anything, any other clubs came along, I guess.
So moving to Spain, taking that decision to move to Spain, I'm assuming it was a pretty easy one. You know, if Barcelona come calling, you don't normally say no. But with a Dutch manager and four of your international teammates joining, I'm assuming it was pretty easy to move to the area and settle, and the Dutch contingent kind of helped each other through that transition?
Well, to be honest, I had two really choices to make. I had Inter Milan was interested in Barcelona, and I just chose what was best for me, as I thought, in football wise, what would be best for me as a player and where could I develop myself best. And I thought that was Barcelona. When I went there, I was the the fourth Dutchman who went that way.
Yeah.
And in the end, of course, we had way too many. I believe we had about 8. Uh-huh. You know, when you're not winning, that causes a problem. Prior to that, I did study some Spanish over in Holland without knowing later on I would go to Spain. I always enjoyed speaking with different players in the dressing room. And one of them was Ronaldo, the famous El Fenomeno, the Brazilian Ronaldo, who started his European career at PSV. But did speak a bit of the language. So when I went to Barcelona, I integrated rather quickly into the team and within the country. Because I always say, if you move abroad, the most important thing is that you adapt, because no one's going to adapt to you, because you're the visitor. You should be adapting. One of the most important things is that you speak the language so that you can communicate with everybody in the club. You understand what they're talking about. And of course, it's easier for yourself if you move around in the town that you can speak a word.
Yeah, of course, of course. You speak quite a few languages, don't you, if my research serves me right?
Yes, I do.
Of your time at Barcelona then, what would you say your best moments, what are your best memories from your time at Barca?
I guess in the first year winning the league, that was something special. You know, at Barcelona, finishing second isn't the best. We had one year where we finished second, lost semi-finals in the Champions League, semi-finals in the Cup, and then the manager got sacked because obviously that's not good enough.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, there came a new manager who wanted to do exactly the contrary of Van Gaal. And that wasn't easy for the Dutch. Yeah, that's, if I say in a nutshell, that's how it went. The three years I've been there, I really enjoyed it. I still have good memories, met a lot of good people, and I'm still very welcome.
Excellent. That season after Van Gaal left, you kind of didn't play as much as you had in the previous seasons.
Yes.
And then Chelsea came calling, and obviously you made that move to the Premier League. Did you push for that transfer to Chelsea, or would you have preferred to have stayed, even if it was only as more of a squad player?
No. It's two things. I was looking for more regular football. That's one. And if a manager would come in and would be able to consider you as one of your starters, then, yeah, of course, why would you leave? But Chelsea came along and showed their interest, were eager to sign me on. And I guess then for me, it was a logical next step to move to Chelsea. I had no regrets there, but sometimes you do feel that things are going towards a dead end, and then you have to choose your you have to choose wisely and make a decision if you want it or not. That I guess that's football. And as I said, you always want to be somewhere where you feel that you're appreciated.
Yeah.
And as I said, for me, it was important to play football, also to still have an eye on the national team.
Yeah, of course. So did you have other options other than Chelsea at the time? Or
well, you can imagine that if you leave Barcelona, there's quite some options. Uh-huh. The funny bit was that when I decided to go and join Chelsea, Newcastle came along and they just asked if I was interested. And I said, listen, I'm not interested because I'm already given my word to Chelsea, and that was my choice. But funny enough, obviously the press picks up on that and they make a story out of it. And then the first league game at Chelsea was...
it was against Newcastle.
Chelsea-Newcastle. So you know what the papers are about before the game. Funny enough, the fans, they're always eager to make something funny out of it. So every time I did touch the ball, there were some funny cheers from the Newcastle fans. But then I scored the first goal, and then they were a bit more quiet after that.
Yeah, that was quite early on in the game, wasn't it? And how was that feeling to get off the mark in the Premier League after only kind of, I think it was 8 minutes, was it, or something like that? Ten minutes into your first game. How was that feeling?
Well, there's always great. Always great. It's perfect. It's some of those moments you just cherish. And another thing that surprised me was, as I said, in Barcelona, if you have a draw and you have to leave the stadium, they're not really happy.
Yeah.
And we drew that game against Newcastle, and I still had to walk from the stadium to the car park.
Right.
I was a bit anxious to come across the fans because I thought, okay, here we go again.
Uh-huh.
But all the fans I came across said, oh, don't worry, son. Well done. Well played. We'll get them next week. And they were so positive. It's like, everywhere I've been in the UK, people have always been very good to me, and they appreciated, I guess, the way I played or what I've given on the field. And that was different than in Barcelona, where only results count.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that wherever you've been in the UK in the Premier League, the fans have taken to you very, very well.
So,
and you're definitely obviously making a name for yourself in the Premier League during your time at Chelsea, and then that continued when you went to Middlesbrough and then obviously to Liverpool.
Mm-hmm.
You had a great start at Liverpool and were playing really well, but obviously you suffered quite a bad injury in the in the Champions League, which effectively ended your season then.
How did you
cope with having to put your career on hold at that point?
Well, it wasn't easy, but why wasn't it easy? Of course, you come to a new club and you want to put a stamp on it. And it was Champions League game against Betis Seville, 10 minutes before the end. It was a clumsy thing with the fullback, and I felt something in my knee. I still finished the game. I went to the doctor. I said, I'm not sure, something happened in my knee. Oh, I had a look at it. Next day, we had a scan. He said, well, possibly ACL rupture. I said, no, you're joking. I couldn't believe it. I trained for another 2 weeks by myself, but it still didn't feel right. I went for a second opinion in Holland, and he said, listen, the ACL is gone. You have to get it repaired. On the day I flew to the States to get my knee surgery, that same day, Liverpool flew to Japan to play the Intercontinental, the club, World Club.
The club World Cup,
That was a really a tough one. And then you're out for at least 6 to 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
I did 95% of my rehab at Melwood. And they had a very nice window where I was working in the gym and had a look at the guys doing their rondos and stuff. That did make it easier. But I went to every single game. I was in the dressing rooms. I've always been part of the players. It's not that I've been away for 6 months and then came back in. I trained 6 days a week. I focused fully on my rehab. And I thought, as you say in England, take it on the chin. I mean, I'm not going to change the situation. The only thing I can change is how do I react to it? What am I going to do about the situation? And the only thing I could was just work as hard as I could to come back. And I was back in 5 months, I guess, five, six. But the season just ended too soon for me, which was on one side was a pity. On the other end, it was a good moment because it meant that I could just go on holidays, train by myself. And
just focus on the next season.
Do a proper preseason. So the next preseason was, for me, was perfect to step in. And then in my second season, I did my exterior meniscus in the game. And that took me out again for three months. So that was also, always in hindsight, you could say maybe you recovered too quick from your ACL.
Possibly.
That's how you ruptured your meniscus. Or did I already rupture my meniscus when I did my ACL? You're never gonna know.
Was it the same?
Everything the same.
So it's possible then. One thing I'm always interested to know, like when you're as a player, you're out for the 5-6 months with a quite a serious injury, even though you're going into the club all the time, does the manager speak to you still? Do you still have meetings with him?
Rafa did. I guess it's easier when you're always in the club. Is that when you're not? I think that if you're really out of the picture and you train somewhere else by yourself, you don't have as much feeling. But I was there 6 days a week. Everybody saw me train from 9 in the morning till 5 in the afternoon.
I guess it would have been difficult to have missed you in that respect. Obviously, it's two relatively big injuries during your time at Liverpool. Would you say that your time at Liverpool was the most frustrating of your career because of those injuries, and obviously getting yourself back into the team twice and then having it being knocked back through injury?
Well, I don't see it that way. I still have very good feelings. As I said, I still feel very welcome. It makes a big difference because in that period at Liverpool, we did win quite a bit. I did play the Champions League final, although not semi-injured, but it wasn't...
Not fully
fit. No, because we went on not pre-season, but we did a small training camp towards the final in Athens. And during that camp, I had a clumsy tackle kind of thing with Stevie G. And I fully twisted my left ankle. I had probably two tennis balls in my ankle of a swelling. So that was only 4 or 5 days before the final. So I thought, that's my final. I'm gone. That's it. You know, you work hard. You did everything you could. You come back from injuries. And then all of a sudden, you get tangled in a clumsy way and your ankle is gone. But I worked 24/7. And I did start the game with an injection and with a strapping. And I knew I wasn't going to finish the game, but I knew I was going to play about an hour. And that's how it went down. And then Harry Kuehl came on. And in the end, we lost the final 2-1. It's a low point, but at the same time, it's a high point. At Liverpool, I remember the game where West Ham was up 3-0 in the FA Cup final and Stevie G got us back 3-3 and then still winning on penalties. Those things, I'm more likely to think of the good stuff than the bad stuff.
Yeah, of course.
I played all the games in the Champions League. I did take a penalty in the shootout against Chelsea in the semis at Anfield, which was an amazing game for us.
Yeah,
these things I still cherish more so than the injuries. I mean, the injuries, they come. Yeah, what am I going to do about it?
Yeah,
the same at Chelsea. When I was at Chelsea, we played a semi-final return in the cup in January, and I got kicked out of the game by Teddy Sheringham, and I had a thigh laceration, took me out for 3 months, and I didn't even know if I was going to play football again because my quad muscle was split over all the way to the bone for about 14 centimeters in the length.
Yeah, yeah.
You never know if you're going to play again.
Well, of course.
But I still came back. So it's things happen, but what can you do? It just happens. And as I said, take it on the chin, get on with it.
Yeah.
It's not about how often you go down. It's about getting up again. And that's what I always did.
Yeah, of course.
So that's why everywhere I've been, I have fun memories. I think about the good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Why should I be bothered thinking about the bad stuff?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, I mean, you've been at some very successful football clubs and had some very successful moments, like you said. I think it was the end of your second season you left Liverpool and when your contract expired. And then you left the Premier League altogether and went to Marseille. So I think you would probably be, 31 at the time?
31.
Yeah. So at that point, did you think your time in the Premier League is finished?
Not finished. You never know in football. I guess that showed afterwards. But
yeah, of course, yeah.
I guess it was different. I played at Chelsea. Had a good time at Middlesbrough. Had a good time, as we spoke about, at Liverpool. So what's next? I signed for 2 years at Liverpool, and my contract was running out. And I had a good chat with Rafa.
Yeah.
And Rafa said, "Listen, if you want to stay, you can, but I'm gonna get other players in, and maybe you should get a pay cut or something, you know." So
right,
what we set up is the more you play, the more you earn, which is normal. And he said, "Listen, I'm still gonna buy some players. It's up to you." And I said, "Listen, I'm gonna see if there's something out there for me differently."
Mm-hmm.
That's when I signed for Marseille.
2 seasons in Marseille.
2 years.
Your contract expired in the summer of 2009. And then you're without a club until October, when our club, Sunderland, approach you to sign on. So how did that come about? How did signing for Sunderland become a reality? What was the story there?
Honestly, I'm not sure anymore. I don't know exactly what it was, but I really have to think how it went down. Hmm. I did leave Marseille, and I knew what I had in the UK. I knew how life was, but also how the Premier League was. But I thought maybe it was the best way to go back. I trained, I was fit enough, and then I got the invitation to go to have a test, a fitness test at the Sunderland.
Yeah.
So I trained, and we played a 11v11.
Uh-huh.
And I remember playing well and scoring a goal. And I remember afterwards, Steve Roos said it was a no-brainer, really, to sign me on.
Yeah.
So I signed for 2 years again.
Excellent. So that was your route back to the Premier League. I'm guessing it must have been different at Sunderland, having been at the likes of Chelsea and Liverpool, clubs who've played Champions League and have been vying for titles. So just how different was it at Sunderland compared to the likes of Chelsea and Liverpool?
To be honest, in the beginning, I didn't straight away notice a difference because Sunderland is a big club with a lot of opportunities. They have that great training facilities, the big stadium, the crowd was there. But along the way, I did notice a difference where, as you mentioned, in all the other clubs, I've always trained and played to win trophies and to get better.
Yeah.
And fight for the top spots.
And
that wasn't the case at Sunderland. And I really noticed that there was a change when, for example, the relegation zone came close. And then all of a sudden, all alarm bells went off.
Yeah.
And that's when I really noticed, and I think, okay, this is how it goes. You know, all is fine until you get to the bottom bit, you know? That was strange. That was not something I was used to. And okay, you win, okay, you lose a game, then okay, whatever, we go again next week. I'm thinking, there were times when I really thought it didn't feel right. Yeah. And that was also one of the reasons, actually, that in the end, in my second season, I played my last game away at West Ham, and we won 3-0. I scored the first goal.
That game, yeah.
I was I captained the team played from the middle. I knew I was leaving. I already notified the club, the manager, and it was because my contract ran out, but they offered me another year, another deal, also because that was something that was in my contract, that if I played more than half of the games or something, what it was, I get an automatic extension. But it was still down to me if I wanted to have that or not. And I decided that it was time for me to leave. And that was one of the reasons why I thought, listen, I wasn't really, really enjoying that bit where all was fine until you got closer to the relegation zone.
Yeah.
And that's not really something I enjoyed. And let's put it this way. And I just said, listen, this is not for me. I'm going to move on and see what's out there for me, because I was 35 at the time. And I thought I still wanted something that I could enjoy. And the last little bit, I didn't really enjoy no more.
Yeah.
And then we did finish 10th.
Yeah.
We did win the game. But the build-up to the game wasn't what I expected it to be, because I really thought we would have a proper go at it and put everything aside to make sure that we did finish 10th.
Yeah.
But I would almost say that it was something that just came off the cuff that we did finish 10th. Of course, some other results went our way, but we did win 3-0, and that was all we could do.
We could have finished like 7th or 8th, or could have finished 13th or 14th, wasn't it? Depending.
Yeah, it could go either way. The only thing you should do is win your game.
Yeah.
But you would expect that leading up the last week of training that you would do everything possible to get the result. But I didn't feel the urge, because we were safe.
Yeah.
You know,
but there wasn't really any.
So what
desire.
for me the big opportunity, or what should be something to grab onto, is to say, listen, we have an opportunity here to finish 10th, you know, or maybe 9th. But it was, the feeling I had was just, well,
yeah, we're safe
anyway.
Let's just get this game out of the way. And
oh, well, you just see what happens.
Yeah.
And we did win 3-0, but that wasn't like, that was the whole idea. The whole mindset wasn't like, okay, let's do something special for the club.
But even then, I think West Ham were bottom, weren't they? And they were already relegated, so they didn't have anything to play for. So it should have been a game that during that whole week, you should have, the whole team and the management should have been looking at and thinking, yeah, we can have a right good go here, and trying to get everyone motivated for it.
If you look at it that way, that was something that was hard for me. Also, in all the other clubs I played before, I played in Europe. I've always played either Europa League or Champions League. And then that was the first time I didn't.
Yeah.
And I had some spare time. So what I did is I followed some Italian classes at home to learn Italian. So I had a private teacher coming to my home once a week for a few hours, just to keep me busy. But it's just that I needed to
play in the Champions League.
I needed to fill a gap or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
It was different. I did enjoy my time.
Yeah.
As I said, I still have good memories, scored a few goals, met good people, very friendly people at the club. Literally, the club did everything for me they could. Nice people working there. And also, What I really noticed, it's with Niall Quinn at the time and Alan Short as chairman, the way the club was melted into the area, into the problems that are in the area, the foundation, you know, the evenings organized for the foundation, the school set up, the second chance, you know, where the kids that had problems at home or in school, they came back to Sunderland Stadium to have extra schooling or stuff like that. They were really bedded into the community, and that's something that that I really appreciated as well. And I was club captain.
Yeah.
So I learned a lot, which means there's two different things. The manager came up to me and said, "Do you want to be club captain?" I said, "Club captain? You mean captain?" I said, "No, club captain." He says, "Okay, well, but what's a club captain then? What, I mean, what's the difference and a captain?" I said, "Well, we have a captain who is obviously Lee Cadamal, who goes onto the pitch with the armband. And then we have the club captain." I said, "But what's the difference then?" He said, "Well, the club captain does everything with sponsors, foundation, media, all the other stuff."
Yeah.
I said, "But what's the point of not having a captain?" And then it came, you know, I thought that was something for the captain. I said, "Well, we strongly feel that you should be doing that part of it."
Yeah.
And of course, when you do play and Lee comes off or you come on or whatever it is, you can still have the armband. But so there was a bit of a first for me where they split it up, the tasks from the captain. So
is that not something you had captain. Before in your career?
No, you were either captain or you were not captain. That normally you don't see. I've been in talks and meetings. I believe it was Margaret Byrne at the time.
Mm-hmm.
That was the legal advisor as well at the club. They had a lot of good chats. Yeah, I've learned a lot from it, so I was happy to do that.
That second season, Bowler, when we finished 10th, obviously we lost Darren Bent in January,
but
there were still some fantastic footballers in that squad. There was obviously yourself, Steed, Stefan, we had Welbeck in on loan as well. Given that, do you think that actually Steve Bruce underachieved that season, given the team that we had?
Well, we also had, I believe, was it Sully Montari? From on loan from Inter or AC Milan, goalkeeper, Simon Mignolet.
Yeah.
We did have quite a good team, but I'm not sure if you could say underachievers if in the end you finished 10th.
Yeah, I was just thinking that, but obviously given that 10th place finish,
it could have been 14th.
Yeah, that's true.
I guess it's all in hindsight, so you don't really know, is it?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
But when I played at Middlesbrough, if you look at the players we've had back then, we finished 7th in the league and won the League Cup.
Yeah.
Played in Europe up until last 16, which was a very good period for the club.
Yeah.
And something that we did that really made the fans proud, and still the people up at Middlesbrough are talking about that period. Now, if you look at the team that we had at Sunderland, maybe you should think that maybe we could have achieved something similar.
Yeah. Given that mid-table finish and given that the kind of attitude around the club was, it's okay, you know, perhaps we don't need to give everything because we're not in the relegation zone. If everybody did have the same attitude as yourself and in driving the club forward and wanting to go into every game winning them, that we could have probably achieved a bit more and maybe even got into Europe.
Yeah, as I say, it's always hard to say afterwards, or is it not? It's hard to tell. I can assure you that obviously the Premier League is a very tough league that everybody's fighting for every spot. Yeah. It's not also that you go on the field to lose a game or thinking everything is fine. We still in the team, we still have players like Kieran Richardson, Andy Reid, Phil Bardsley.
Yeah.
I can mention still another few players that definitely gave their role during the game.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more the general feeling. It's more the desire day in, day out to get the best out of it and not just on a Saturday. Doing everything you can during the week to be ready on a Saturday. And I mean, as I said, if you do lose a game and think, well,
they're
not too bothered.
Thinking,
okay. Yeah. You know, it's just a general feeling. And yeah, maybe if we would have been different in that matter, then maybe things could have been different. But
I just wanted to pick up on a couple of, obviously, certainly mine and I'm sure most Sunderland fans' fondest memories of you. And I couldn't speak to you today without kind of mentioning them. You kind of had a pretty good habit of coming off the bench to score goals.
Yes.
And one in much happier times for us as Sunderland fans was that goal against Spurs. Within kind of 8 minutes, 10 minutes of you coming on, Jordan Henderson crosses the ball in. Mm-hmm. What's going through your mind as you wait at the back post and watching that ball float past everybody, realise it's coming to you?
Well, it's obviously a big game. It was 2-1 at a time. Mm-hmm. It's where you either consolidate your score or you go for the one to finish it off.
Yeah.
I still believe that we had a fantastic game. We played well. We really deserved the win.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in English football, if there's 10 minutes to go and they're still having a go at it, you might lose it.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, of course, the cross came in from Hendo. I was at the far post. And during my career, I always practiced volleys in training. And if it comes in a game, you do the best you can. And sometimes you have to take a chance. And, of course, these kind of balls, they can finish up in the stand somewhere on the third tier. Or they do end up in the stench. And this is the one where it ended up nicely at the far post. It was the goal that sealed our win that day. And I remember my parents were there for the game to watch.
Yeah.
So for me to come on and score that goal, that was something special for me. Yeah.
Is it one of the best goals that you've scored in your career?
I wouldn't say the best, but it was, it's up there. It was a very nice one.
Yeah. It was a bit of a crazy game as well. I was actually at that game. I remember I went out with one of my friends who was a Spurs fan. And it was a crazy game as well. So it was just as well that we finished it off. Because I think, was that the one where Darren Bent missed two penalties, scored a third? Yes. Yeah, it was crazy.
Everything was going on that game. But as we said, it's always nice in the end when you can say that you've won it.
Yeah, and it was a brilliant goal to settle those 3 points. And like you said, it was a big game for us as well. That for me, I think, is certainly one of my fondest memories that I've got of you in a Sunderland shirt. The other, and I wasn't going to mention it, but I can't not mention it, was...
I know what you're going to say now.
Yeah.
What's that?
You
mean Chelsea away?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. I'm sure you've been asked this a million times, Bolo, but I'm guessing it's not something that you'd practiced.
You could tell by the dance.
Yeah. Did you know that that's what you were going to do as you were running to Asamoah in the corner, or was it kind of
No, of course not. It's just you play away at Chelsea, my former team, again, once again. They were flying in the league.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you play a good game and you're winning 3-0 at the Bridge.
Yeah.
And then the third goal comes in and Asamoah goes to the corner where the Sunderland fans are and he sets in his chicken dance. and he obviously dances. He did dance in the dressing room at times and we're having a laugh. And he was also DJing and making songs and what more he was doing back in Ghana.
Yeah.
And I just ran over to the corner and tried for whatever reason to join in. But it always, let's put it this way, it always had to be a funny thing. It's never meant to be.
No, of course, yeah.
I never in a million times would have thought that I could pull off the same as he did. But just, hey, whatever, just join in 3-0.
Yeah, yeah. Like you said, those sorts of results, particularly at Stamford Bridge, don't come around too often. So.
No. And the funny bit is you still get a... Due to that one, I had, again, a different relationship with the fans because every time afterwards I was in the game or when I started my warm-up, the Sunderland fans started singing, Bolo, Bolo, give us a dance, you know.
Yeah.
So that was funny. And then I believe when I did score my goal at West Ham, they sang it again and I did dance some kind of shuffle.
Yeah, I remember.
I believe it was, you know, you had LMFAO. That had this, this crazy dance at that time.
Yeah.
Where they ran in the streets and they did this dance. And I did something like that. It's just, it's all for the banter.
And I think I speak for every single Sunderland fan to say that we loved every moment of that. It was brilliant.
It made Twitter and the match of the day. So
that game against West Ham was your last game where you were captain, you scored. Like you said, you made the decision that you weren't going to extend your stay at Sunderland. Obviously, you didn't play again professionally after you left the club, but you did go into coaching. Now, I know that a lot of Sunderland fans would have liked to have seen you stay at the club, if not in the playing capacity, then certainly in a coaching capacity. Was that ever on the table for you? No.
In my mind, I was going to play again.
Okay.
The manager, Steve Bruce, said, if it doesn't work out for you, the door is always open. I could come back. I'm thinking, well, I made a decision that I'm leaving and that's it.
Yeah.
I did want to go somewhere to play another year. Nothing to do with finance, nothing to do with the club or whatever. I just wanted to be somewhere where I could join my last year or maybe two because I was fit.
Yeah.
In a different way. And a few things came along, but nothing really came that set my eye to, that fitted my situation, because my missus was pregnant and then she gave birth to our first. And I had, for example, the opportunity to go to China. I'm thinking, why would I still go to China? Yeah. Do I go on my own? Do I bring a 2-month-year-old to China somewhere? I was just not having it. Mm. And I did have contact with Blackburn Rovers at the time, that was still in the Premier League. I did speak to Celtic at the time, but it didn't work out. And I trained for a year for myself. I was fit as a fiddle.
Yeah,
I could join in without any problems.
Uh-huh.
But it didn't really happen. And then the year after, Rafa Benitez, which I still had contact with, they said if I was interested in joining in as an assistant manager.
Yeah,
and I frankly
he was
said
at Chelsea
the same,
at the time.
No, he wasn't anywhere.
Oh, okay.
No, he wasn't anywhere yet. And I said quite frankly, I said, it depends where.
Mm.
I'm not going to go just anywhere. And he said, well, it's in the Premier League. It's a top four team. So then I was thinking, okay, there can only be one.
Yeah.
One or two. And I believe it was either Manchester City or Chelsea.
Uh-huh.
And then I believe it was Mancini extended his contract or something. And then Di Matteo went out because he was under pressure. They were eighth in the league or seventh in the league. And they were struggling to qualify in the Champions League. And then he went out. And then Rafa called me again a few days after or day after. And he said, make sure you're in London tomorrow. And then I went to Chelsea.
Wow. So it's a 24-hour
notice. It was very short notice. So I said to the missus, I said, we're off to London tomorrow.
By the way.
Well, I first went on my own. But And that was the same at Sunderland when, just to pick, to go back to that one, I believe it was Steve Bruce that just extended his contract in the month before the end of the season. And I thought, okay, I'm not going to stay.
Yeah.
And then 3 months after, or 5 months, 3 or 5 months after I left, he got sacked.
Yeah. Okay. So just to finish up, Bolo, I've got a couple of quick fire questions that I want to finish up with, which kind of summarizes or sums up your career. So the first one is, who's the best player that you've played with in your career?
Ronaldo.
A Brazilian Ronaldo, of course.
The Brazilian Ronaldo,
At PSV, yeah.
Yeah. I played 3 years with him when he came from Brazil to Europe first.
Uh-huh.
And I've had many great players.
Yeah, of course.
Also at Barca, but just for two reasons, I guess. Maybe his what he did when he came from Brazil to Europe.
Yeah,
I've seen him obviously every day in training, but also his personality. He was a great guy.
Yeah,
considered him as a friend.
A good choice. I'm sure many people would agree with you. The best player that you played against.
I would say Michael Reisiger.
Mm-hmm.
He used to play obviously at Ajax, and later on I played with him at Barcelona.
Yeah.
But he was a very clever and quick right back.
Yeah. Okay. The manager that you had the best relationship with?
I've had a few,
mm-hmm.
But I have to pick only one.
Yeah.
That's the problem. I think I had a good relationship. A good feeling with Frank Rijkaard.
Yeah.
When he was at the national team.
Uh-huh.
I can only give you one example. We played the Euros in 2000.
Uh-huh.
And I played with number 5 because the first game of the tournament I played left back.
Yeah.
And then we went for the second game in the tournament. And in training, I played left winger and Overmars right winger. But Overmars didn't want to play on the right. He wanted to play on the left. So manager came up to me and says, listen, Bolo, we have a problem. We all know what it is. Do you mind playing on the right? I said, listen, it's not my preferred position, but for the team, I'll do it. Then we played against Denmark, and I had a horrible first half. I couldn't get past Jan Heinze, the left back for Denmark, and we struggled in the game. And then in the second half, Ronald de Boer was warming up, and he would definitely come on as a right winger. I'm thinking, okay, this is not looking good. What have I done, you know? And then the substitute board came on, and he took off Overmars. So he put me on the left and Ronald de Boer on the right. And in the game afterwards, I gave an assist and I scored a goal. And I played the rest of the tournament as a left winger. Just try to explain the feeling that you then have is that the manager pays you back for the trust that you obviously...
Yeah, of course.
...given earlier on that you put yourself on the line.
Yeah.
And I had a great tournament.
Yeah. The last couple then... A kind of more Sunderland related. So, who was your closest friend in the Sunderland dressing room?
Ooh, I had a few good relationships.
You can give me a couple if you're going to upset somebody by picking one over the other.
No, the funny thing is, I still have contact with several of them. Simon Mignolet, I'm still talking to. Just the other day, I had a conversation with Paulo da Silva.
Yeah.
One of them for sure was Jubril Cisse.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And
a few good ones.
It's good that you, especially Paulo da Silva, I wouldn't have expected. I would have expected him to have kind of left the club and then no one really hear from him again. But
No. And even the other goalkeeper, Greg Gordon, Michael Turner, was a good guy.
Yeah.
I hardly have problems with anybody.
In those 2 years that you played at Sunderland, who would you say was the best player that you played with then?
That's hard to pick. Just, you know, the thing is, everybody has their own qualities in their own positions.
Yeah,
that's how it's.
So, who was the best footballer then? Would you say, like, the most technically gifted?
I enjoyed Steed.
Mm-hmm.
Steed Malbranck had a good, very good quality. I liked him as a player.
Yeah,
but he didn't play too much either on the Bruce. I still believe afterwards he went back to Lyon and played Champions League and everything.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. I think that was one of the most frustrating things for Sunderland fans, is the fact that for some reason yourself and Steed didn't really get the minutes that we'd hoped that you had, because you technically were probably two of our better players. But.
Yeah, I guess that maybe due to the way we played, where many times maybe you did play a little bit more opportunistic with a long ball up to our big man, Cameron Jones.
Yeah.
Or maybe with Darren.
Yeah. You know,
put him in a channel and let him run. We played slightly different than what we could. Because if you see how our friend Hendo is doing at the minute at Liverpool, he's a totally different player than maybe when he was at Sunderland.
Yeah. Yeah.
We had a few players that could definitely play in a different way than what we did.
Yeah. But you were instructed to play in a certain way, obviously. It was probably a little bit restricting. Okay, so final one from me then, Bolo.
Yes.
Do you have any regrets from your time at Sunderland?
No.
No? No time for a regret?
No. No, seriously.
Currently, you're with PSV on the coaching.
Yes, I'm assistant manager. I've been managing ever since I started with Chelsea. I did Chelsea for a year, then I did the reserve team at PSV for a year, and then I went into as a specialist coach, where I trained the forwards at PSV, the first team.
Yeah.
And I was part-time assistant manager. And in December, our coaching staff got sacked due to the results, and they asked me to help out the club as an assistant manager, which I did. And for next year, we'll have a new manager.
Yeah.
And talks are still going on to see if I'm going to be doing something again with the first team.
Yeah. And do you have aspirations to be a number one one day? Or are you
not happy? Sure. Not sure.
No, not sure. Not sure.
But more likely, I'm going to be a specialist trainer again next year.
Yeah. Well, Bolo, it's been an absolute pleasure.
You're welcome.
I wish you all the very best for the future. Bolo, thank you ever so much. Stay safe. And hopefully we'll catch up again at some point.
You too. Thanks. Also to all the listeners, stay safe. And after the rain, you know, sun will come out.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.